This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Hey, what's up, everybody? It's Dirt. I want to thank you for taking some time out to listen to the podcast of our show, brought to you by Les Schwab Tires, doing the right thing since 1952.
Last year, I spent more money on spilled liquor in bars from one side of this world to the other than you made.
It's time for Dirt and Sprague.
You talking to the Rolex-wearing, diamond ring-wearing, gift-stealing, woo!
With Andy Dirt Johnson and Brendan Sprague.
Wheeling-dealing, limousine-wrecked, jet-flying, son of a gun.
Dirt and Sprague on 1080.
And I'm having a hard time holding these alligators down.
The Fan.
All right, welcome back in. Hour number two. What is... Okay, what's going on here? That was Sprague's fault. Damn it, Dirt, you're an idiot.
Stop. Just stop doing that.
How do you know it's not just one person right now? I could be talking to myself.
Wait a minute, let me run.
Hold on. How do you know?
Running back and forth between microphones.
Really looking forward to hearing that song. It got me all fired up. It was Ric Flair. I'm woo, wooing into the second hour.
Sometimes I'm kind of a D-bag, and I'll text my buddies when I'm at the gym at 4:45. And I'll go, you guys better wake up and get something done today. And I'll send the gif of Ric Flair bleeding from his head, just completely on steroids. You know that gif where he just like, woo!
Yeah, I'm freaking out.
I love that gif.
It gets you fired up every time.
All right, we're awaiting Dan Wolkin of USA Today. He's a national college football columnist, and he wrote an article, you know, kind of around Mario Cristobal, and he's going to join us here in just a second. I think Swag has got him on the line now.
Well, it's a good piece. We tweeted it out. You can go read it.
I just put it out there at Dirt and Sprague.
Yeah, I mean, just the ability for coaches to change the perception and the opinion around them, and who knows where this goes 3, 4, 5 years from now. But you go back 5 years ago, and you think of the opinion of Ed Orgeron and Mario Cristobal, it has changed drastically.
All right, and he joins us now, Dan Wolkin of USA Today, national columnist on college football. He's on Twitter, at Dan Wolkin. Give him a follow on Twitter. Dan, thanks so much for joining us here in Portland, man. Great piece on Cristobal, and I want to start with him. So you kind of dive into his start at Florida International and how he didn't win, it didn't go well, he was fired. What did you think of when they hired Mario Cristobal as the head coach at Oregon versus what is just your thought now?
Well, I think the Cristobal thing was really inside baseball. I think people who follow college football as closely as I do, which, you know, may not be that many people, but kind of knew that was a crazy situation. Mm-hmm. The fact that he had actually had a couple good years there was pretty impressive. And I think a lot of people in the college sports business blamed FIU and the athletic director there, you know, for just the whole situation as much as Cristobal, but it's the same time when you get fired at Florida International, you're not a hot name anymore. You know, if somebody tried to hire you to be a big school head coach or bigger school head coach, you I don't think they'd be able to do it even if they wanted to, just because fans would not understand. So when Oregon hired Cristobal, I thought it made sense. I certainly understood the logic behind it. And I didn't know how well or not well he would do. Mm-hmm. But after the time at Alabama and he had been there a year with Taggart, I got it. Maybe if some people didn't, I totally understand. But I kind of got it.
Yeah, I think too, and this is kind of a cliche radio question, but I do find it interesting just looking at the conference going forward. What Cristobal has done now in year two, you highlight his ability to recruit in the article. They're in the conversation. Who knows how the season ends, but they're in the conversation for the college football playoff. Is there a stock right now in this conference, either as, you know, as a coach and a program, that you would put ahead of Cristobal for the, I guess, brightness of the future that could be in the next 5 years?
Not right now. I don't think so, because Washington is kind of stalled. You know, they made the playoff a few years ago, and they've been pretty disappointing since then. The UCLA thing looks better now than it did a few weeks ago with Chip Kelly, but they're not, you know, they're not recruiting the best players in the country. They're going to win, try to win the way Chip did at Oregon with, you know, kind of his own style guys. And then, you know, the USC thing, we'll see how it goes with the new coach. And I know Clay Helton has not been fired yet, but assuming that the decision gets made after the season to move on from Clay Helton, whoever they hire will, I think, determine where you place their stock. But right now, the way Oregon's recruiting in California and what they've done this year, they're certainly, I think, positioned well to dominate on the West Coast.
Dan Wolkin is our guest, national columnist for USA Today. He covers college football. He is on Twitter, at Dan Wolkin, wrote a piece, just an opinion piece about what schools, other schools can learn from Oregon's hiring of Mario Cristobal. We put it on Twitter. It's a good piece. Just kind of dive into Cristobal's start and then where he's at right now. I do want to kind of bring Oregon back in, but talk college football with you on this, and that's the rankings, right? We love to debate the rankings. I always find different opinions very interesting in how people view teams. And right now you have Oregon outside of the top four. You have Alabama outside of the top four. One, who do you think Oregon will get in that playoff, Dan, if they can, if everything just, everybody runs the table? And two, who would you put in if it was up to you? Would it be Alabama if they can beat Auburn, or would it be Oregon with a Pac-12 championship?
Yeah, I think Oregon, if they do finish this out with the wins in the regular season that they should get, and then beat Utah, who will be ranked very highly as well in that Pac-12 championship game, I think that will be enough to get Oregon in, and I think they should. I think, you know, a team that wins 12 in a row, the one loss would be Auburn, you know, on a kind of last-minute situation, in a game that, frankly, Oregon was the better team for 58 minutes. I think it would be very easy to put Oregon in that Final Four under those circumstances.
Yeah, yeah. But looking too, I mean, at Ed Orgeron, the other coach who's coming off a big win this weekend, and you highlight in the article as somebody who the opinion has just changed drastically around him, a guy at Ole Miss, USC, I mean, he's bouncing around. He was the interim guy at LSU, and now look where they've gone. How surprised are you? We asked you that about Cristobal, but how surprised are you about Ed Orgeron doing this at LSU and having the wherewithal to just really change the identity of the program and get an offense that, as you mentioned, seems unstoppable right now?
Yeah, I totally didn't see this coming. I don't think very many people did. The Ole Miss experience with Ed Orgeron was one of the most disastrous coaching tenures in SEC history. It was terrible. He was totally unprepared and overwhelmed. And look, I understand you learn things, you get better, you know maybe where you need to improve. And I think certainly he did that over the years, and he had shown as an interim coach at USC that maybe some of those things he could apply. But at the same time, LSU is a monster program, and there were a lot of coaches at the time who I think would have fit well there, who have much stronger reputations as program managers, as X's and O's guys. But, you know, Orgeron has definitely evolved and has gotten the program in the right position from a recruiting standpoint, from a coordinator standpoint. He hired really good people. He lets them do their thing. And, you know, that leaves Ed is kind of the motivator, tone setter, and recruiter, which is what he's best at.
Yeah. Well, and I think Cristobal, honestly, is very similar in that regard as well. I mean, he's a great recruiter. He's a good motivator. He's a player's coach that the guys love being a part of the program with him. But he's not calling offensive plays, right? He's not calling defensive plays. Has a hand in the offensive line. What are your thoughts just on the general? And we've seen this, even guys like Herm Edwards at Arizona State, and they crop up every now and then, of that CEO model of coach and how it works in the college game.
Well, I think that the CEO approach is kind of something you have to have because of all of the factors that go into running a program and the responsibilities, the external issues you have to deal with as the head coach. You're not going to necessarily always have time to mess around with a lot of the game plan, nitty gritty, and, you know, the offense or the defense. You know, some guys don't want to give up play calling responsibilities because that's how they made their name. That's how their bread is buttered. as a coach, and that can work out as well. But I do think that maybe our vision has expanded a little bit in terms of the qualities that will make a good head coach.
Yeah. Dan Wolkin, national columnist for USA Today, covering college football as well. He's on Twitter at Dan Wolkin, wrote a piece around Mario Cristobal and just how teams and programs could learn on taking a risk on a guy like Cristobal, who maybe just has some good momentum building, and you'd say, hey, hope you can build on it. We tweeted it out with our show page at Dirt and Sprague, and at 1080 The Fan is where you can find that article. There is a job opening, and that's at Arkansas. So one, can Arkansas be a consistent program in the SEC? And two, why would they not call Mike Leach and just let him come in and do what he wants?
Arkansas is a tough place. It's a place that if you look at the history since they joined the SEC in 1992, they have actually been fairly successful. And I think they can do that. But one theory out there, and I think there's some validity to it, is that the Texas A&M joining the SEC hurt Arkansas quite a bit. Arkansas is kind of in that lane where you got to recruit Texas well, and selling playing in the SEC to Texas kids maybe isn't quite as potent when you've got A&M also in the league. So I think that does hurt. I think Leach could make some sense for Arkansas, but, you know, does he want to take over that total rebuild at a place that, you know, you just don't, you know, maybe you don't know as well as your current situation where you feel like you can have some consistency, and, you know, and also Leach certainly does come with some issues, some, I don't want to say baggage, but, you know, he's a different type of personality, and you have to understand what he's going to bring to the table. And frankly, you know, the risk that he might say something or tweet something that is going to embarrass you.
I feel like he would make it fun for him though. That fan base seems so miserable. They didn't show up to those games, and politically he kind of fits in with a lot of the demographic down there.
Yeah, look, Arkansas is one of the places where maybe that act would play maybe more so there than maybe any other place in the SEC. But, if you're Arkansas, I think he's got to be a consideration, and I've written that before.
Yeah. The other big-time job, obviously, that's open is Florida State, and the Taggart experiment didn't work. Or, you know, some people argue they gave up on it too early, but wasn't looking good 2 years in, and he's now been fired. I know Deion Sanders has been rumored. Bob Stoops has been rumored. Who do you think Florida State should go after?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think that some of those names are particularly realistic. I think it's, you know, I don't think they're going to be able to get James Franklin. I think the more realistic type of hire would be a Mike Norvell at Memphis, who does not have necessarily any Florida ties, but it was just done a great job at Memphis, has been very consistent there, recruits well, has a good offensive system. He's not a one-hit wonder at Memphis. They've been good every year he's been there. So I think Norvell would make some sense for Florida State, but we'll see what they do.
Here we go. Good stuff from Dan Wolkin of USA Today, national columnist, wrote a piece around Mario Cristobal and how programs can learn from Oregon hiring him. He's on Twitter at Dan Wolkin. Dan, thank you so much for hopping on with us here in Portland, man. We appreciate it. Good piece, and we'll catch up with you soon.
Okay, thanks, guys.
Yep, there we go. Good stuff from Dan Wolkin on college football in general. And just, I think he... Cristobal does fall into that category. I said yesterday Orgeron, for me, fell into that category. The Ole Miss stint did not go well.
No.
I saw the kind of the charade at USC, and what I mean by that is it didn't feel authentic of the, come on, guy, put me on your shoulder.
Yeah.
Go
Tigers!
And look, retrospect, that should have been their hire, right? They shouldn't have gone outside of Ed Orgeron, but in the moment, I didn't bat an eye at that. I was like, yeah, I get it. You don't want to hire a defensive line coach who flamed out in the SEC. I understand it, but guys can turn around. Like, players do that, right? Let's use Andrew Wiggins. Andrew Wiggins is a good example of this. Andrew Wiggins has largely not been what we thought he would be. He's still got a monster contract.
Every time it's been argued the Blazers should trade for him, everybody balks at the notion. Yep. No, don't want anything to do with him.
But if you look at his game logs this year, he's playing good basketball. He's got Minnesota in contention in almost every game they play. Guys can change in sports, coach or player. It doesn't matter. And I think it's hard to not have a definitive opinion on somebody when you see them fail.
Yeah.
And there are guys that come back. Cristobal's doing it. Orgeron's doing it. you get those stories that, you know, they learn from their mistakes.
Well, the only difference, I think, between the two of them is Cristobal was set with, or I guess faced with, a much different set of circumstances. I mean, FIU is just a dumpster fire of a program. They were going through NCAA violations. I mean, he highlights a point in the story, Wolken does, that they once had to spend like, you know, a couple hours on a tarmac because somebody didn't pay the transportation bill for the university. I mean, it was a bad situation, whereas Ed Orgeron was at Ole Miss, which isn't great, but at least it's an SEC school, right? He was at USC for a brief time, so he's bounced around to some bigger jobs. But I think the one thing that both of them have done that is very similar is the model in which they coach, and then the overhaul of the identity of the program that I think has allowed each of them to compete at a very high level. LSU was always good, but they didn't have an offense. They were like the Bears of college football. Imagine if they had a quarterback. Well, look at them now. They got a quarterback and they're the number one team in the country. And Oregon was always really good, but you wondered, could they break through without going toe-to-toe in the trenches with elite-level big guys from the SEC? Could they ever win a national championship without the big bodies that you get down south? And Mario Cristobal, who knows if he's ever going to get there, but that is the model in which he's building, and it's exciting for the future.
All right, it's 1:14. You can text your thoughts at 55305. That's the Better You Today text line of maybe a coach or player you gave up on, and they turned it around and surprised you, and you had to change your opinion. Some more on that, and we got a whole lot more to get to next on The Fan. Who's that casting via stairs? All right, welcome back in 1:17 on Portland Sports Leader 1080 The Fan. You doing okay over there? I was a little concerned about my co-host. By the way, this is Brandon Sprague talking.
Hey, Dirt, you sound good today, man.
Shut up. God.
Don't poke the bear!
Sorry, yeah, I'm doing good. Why am I not doing good? Am I not supposed to do good?
No, I just, I woke up, and sometimes you get like that sixth sense feel of like, oh, sure, something's not right.
Uh-oh.
I had a dream about a buddy a while ago, and that he died of a heart attack because he didn't eat very healthy. And he's a big guy.
You trying to...
No. And I told him, and okay, he's since changed his diet a little bit.
Okay, yeah.
But it was one of those kind of feels of something's not right here. I got to check in on my co-host.
Do I need to go to the doctor and get my heart checked out? Is that what you're trying to tell me?
You might have to get your heart checked out, or maybe you need some a therapist or something, because your Giants hired Gabe Kapler.
I don't want to talk about it.
The one person Dirt...
I don't want to talk about it.
Yeah, Dirt specifically said out loud,
I don't want to talk
about
it.
Just don't hire Gabe Kapler.
I don't want to talk about it, man.
And the Giants hired Gabe Kapler.
Yeah, Swigart over there, that jackass at the basketball game the other night, sends me, because it happened while I was at the Oregon so I wasn't on Twitter, I wasn't looking or anything.
Yeah,
I didn't have it. I don't have like alerts or anything like that.
Push notification from old Espen there.
Yeah. Swigart sends me the text. I had a buddy who's a Phillies fan and texted me like, "Ha ha, have fun with that." Bunch of jerks out there. That's all I know. So no, I don't want to talk about it. I'm not doing good.
But
I'm in a really rough spot.
Okay, so one, calm the F down.
They went from Bruce Bochy to Gabe Kapler.
Nobody would have made you as happy as having Bochy.
The bro with six-pack abs, and he wears aviator shades, and he overlooks sexual assault allegations in the Dodger organization.
Okay, the sexual assault allegations.
I'm thrilled to have Gabe Kapler.
The sexual assault allegations I will not defend.
He wears like a douchey pen in his jersey.
Stop shaming the guy for being in good shape. That's just, it's a little.
No, I want my baseball managers old and fat with a toothpick in their mouth, okay?
Joe Madden? You would have been better, but Joe Madden?
Yes. Yeah. Okay. Joe Madden. I don't want Cliff Kingsbury. I don't want a manager who's going to come on and like complain about the way his face looks in a video game.
You don't know. Yeah, you don't want to worry about a coach who's going to steal your wife.
No, exactly.
Right? You don't want that.
He's going to sleep with Bumgarner's wife now.
Well,
I don't even know if he's going to be back next year.
Bumgarner's going to knock him out in the dugout.
I wouldn't worry about Bumgarner. I'd be more worried that Buster Posey's delivering too many children with a catcher's mitt and his wife's home alone.
Yeah, very true. That could be it, too.
But no, I think it brings up the point that we talked about with Dan Wolken. You have already an opinion on who Gabe Kapler is, or maybe will be as a manager,
right?
Without
a doubt, I do.
And I don't blame you for that. I think most of the city, we did this with the current coach of the Blazers.
Yeah, I know I did.
I did too. I wouldn't even work at The Fan, but I remember listening to the radio and hearing the announcement of Stotts being the new coach and thinking, oh, this is going to be a good stepping stone coach for a guy like Dame.
A retread who had been okay, not great, fired after a couple of years, right?
Didn't really do anything at his Atlanta stop or at his Milwaukee stop. He was a good assistant that won a championship at Dallas, but I thought this was a stopgap coach, and he's been here ever since. Giving up on coaches, and I think athletes can be thrown into this lump as well.
Without a doubt.
I don't know what it is, but we just kind of assume nobody can learn or get better. I'll give you an example this year. I'm not going to backtrack off my opinion yet, but I think the last month or so, Chip Kelly's made me look like an idiot.
Sure. I mean, right? they seem competent as a football program.
They're
right
at least
now.
Competitive. Yeah. They're winning their games when Dorian Thompson Robinson plays. I punted on him week one or week two. Ed Orgeron is a guy that gets highlighted by many because he wasn't good at Ole Miss, and now look at him at LSU. Say what you want. I thought he kind of outcoached Nick Saban on Saturday. Yeah. Mario Cristobal is doing it in Eugene right now. Giving up on coaches is something we do a lot. Now, some of those guys, it's warranted. I think other guys, you know, they get that next chance and they get a chance to prove you wrong. Players do this as well.
Yeah, I think too the Orgeron and Cristobal examples are very highlighted in the area of infrastructure around you. You know, when you're coming from Florida International, right? I mean, just that is light years away from the help and the support that you have at a place like Oregon. And I think it has really highlighted his strengths. It's allowed him to have the money to go hire the kind of coaches that he wants, right? He has the facilities and all the glitz and glamour that come with Eugene and Nike and all that stuff that helps him. He's already a great recruiter to begin with, but then you put all that stuff behind it and all of a sudden it's popping and he's recruiting at the highest level in the history of the program. He's got the money to go hire the defensive coordinator that he wants, and Andy Avalos has taken them to another level. I think it's an important example that, one, nobody achieve success in life without some help, no matter what line of work you're in. Everybody needs a helping hand or a boost or a piece of advice or whatever the case may be. And I think Ed Orgeron and Mario Cristobal are prime examples of that. If they have universities that have bought into them, that have said, you know what, whatever it takes and whatever you need, go ahead and do it. And Ed Orgeron at LSU, it's been, I need to hire Dave Aranda and give me all the money in the world to make sure I keep one of the best D coordinators in college football. Let me go hire a guy from the NFL to run my offense. And now there's already reports out at LSU that they're going to make him basically the same pay as an NFL offensive coordinator to keep him from jumping and taking another job. They're getting a ton of help, and then they're the ones that are steering the ship, and they both look extremely successful right now.
And I don't even know where people would place Ed O of you give him 100% of the credit versus, as you mentioned, the infrastructure, right? It's nice to have a program that is willing, Dirt, to say, oh, you want Dave Aranda to stay and you want us to pay $3 million a year? Okay. We'll cough it up. And I think those are the moves, those are the decisions that help change the narrative around a head coach. Because if you took Dave Aranda off, let's say he took a job or he left.
Sure, somebody offers him a head coaching job.
You took the guy who largely gets the credit for their offensive transformation in Joe Brady from the Saints. He goes and gets a head coaching gig at 30 or 31.
She probably will eventually.
How much would we trust Ed O at that point, right?
Right.
So I don't think it's fair to not give him credit, but I also am not sure sometimes with these guys of how much credit you dole out because of what they're doing and who's around them.
Yeah. I mean, to be fair, I mean, Nick Saban's had a lot of those coordinators and coaches over the years, right? I mean, how many of his guys have gone on to become head coaches? I know Cristobal wasn't a coordinator per se, but he was on his staff. Now he's a head coach. You think of Kirby Smart at Georgia, Mel Tucker, all these guys that have bounced around from job to job to job. Jeremy Pruitt, I know Tennessee sucks, but he's had a lot of guys that have been successful under him and they've gone on to other places, and he's been able to continue to steer the ship at a pretty consistent level. I think it just you trust them to go find the next coach. That is the danger in the CEO model when you're relying so much on other coaches. You got to make sure if they do jump for that job, which I'm sure after a year or two, Andy Avalos' name is going to be out there, right? I mean, I'm sure teams are going to want him. Maybe Boise State has an opening and they want to bring him back as a head coach at some point. You got to be able to go find the next guy to continue to drive the boat. But Nick Saban's done it. Other coaches across college football have done it. But I thought Dan Wolken brought up a good point, because I do think you're seeing it more and more at this level, the CEO model, if you will, where they're the ones that are recruiting, they're setting the tone for the program, they're overseeing everything. But in terms of the X's and O's game plan, they kind of trust their coordinators to handle that aspect. And I thought he highlighted a good point that in college, there's just a lot more that you have to do than you have to in the NFL. When you're in the NFL, it's football, football, and football. I mean, that is your life. That is your job. That is it. In the season, off season, there's no recruiting. Like, sure, you're analyzing drafts and you're analyzing free agency, having a say in trades maybe, but you're not on the road recruiting. Like Mario Cristobal and his staff got a bye week last week. They spent the entire week recruiting. They're in the middle of a college football playoff chase. They're trying to get there. They're trying to win the conference. Their whole focus was recruiting. And that's not to mention meeting with boosters, you know, doing all sorts of stuff around the university community. So I think in the college game, it does help you a lot just to be able to space out your time. And if you have coordinators that you trust, it can work for you.
I think one guy to watch this year, because the team is very good and they may win the national championship, Ryan Day in Ohio State, right? Started 3-0. Haven't lost. He's never lost a game as a head coach. He started 3-0 because Urban got suspended, and they're undefeated this year. Yeah. Then they're looking like just a wrecking ball coming for everybody.
Yeah, the same thing with Lincoln Riley at Oklahoma, man. But, there's no drop-off.
But it reminded me of a little bit before going, oh, Ryan Day's clearly their new guy. This is just going to keep going for a decade like it did with Urban. I'm pumping the brakes on that because the last guy that I had that thought with was Larry Coker. Yeah. Larry Coker started, and I'm not sure how many games in a row they won, but
they were dominant.
They went on a hell of a streak. It might have been 30. It might have been 31, but I remember they went on a heck of a streak. He took over.
Won a national championship.
Won a national championship, got to it, and then 2-3 years later, you're like, Larry Coker's not good.
Mark Helfrich, same thing.
That's a good point, too.
Mark Helfrich, and that was, I mean, the ability to recruit, find good assistants. Right, I mean, they didn't have it, and the program slipped. Once the talent was gone, the program slipped. The one guy who I think is now past that, who maybe you could have argued in year one or year two, has shown that he can still do it at a high level, is Lincoln Riley. But Lincoln Riley's a commodity that's going to probably be heading to the NFL at some point. They're going to throw big bucks at him somewhere down the line, and if he wants to take it, it's his.
One of our listeners, Jordan, tweeted us and asked on coaching how much you think the Blazers miss Vanderpool, who is in Minnesota now. He was a great defensive coach. Funny how he leaves in Portland is worse on defense. Minnesota a lot better. I think Vanderbilt helps, but the important part of Portland this year, which is unfortunate, is their front line is both gone. So not to have Zach Collins, I don't know how much better they would be defensively. Again, I think they miss Vanderbilt, but I don't know where I would place percentage on the Blazers falling off the map this year for Vanderbilt versus falling off the map of not having a Zach Collins in your rotation at all.
Yeah.
So it's a good piece. We put it up on Twitter that Dan Wolkin wrote about. Just you don't have to have this definition of a coach if they fail the first time. And maybe that's something we talk about with Mario next week, assuming the Arizona game goes well.
Yeah, he's in a good mood.
It's just, you know, what do you learn when you get fired? Like, what's your first thought when you get fired? Are you thinking, I'm never getting that shot again? I'd love to know his thoughts on that one, but
he's clearly learned a lot, man. He learned a lot at Alabama, and I think the most exciting thing for LSU and Oregon is the way they've transformed the program to what feels like a position where they're built for long-term success.
Yeah, I mean, they're recruiting that way for
Oregon,
sure.
LSU, LSU has an offense. They're in the 21st century now. Oregon's getting bigger and getting more physical, right? It feels like they're built for the long term.
Hey, well, how much damage would load management do to the NFL? Would people be tuning the NFL out, or would it not matter at all? Dirt has an interesting point on one player. We'll talk about that next.
Hey, welcome back in. I'm Sprague. That's Dirt.
Dude, you really got to stop. People are really going to be confused.
It's a really good point, Dirt. I should stop doing that.
Can I ask you a political question?
Do you think anybody gets me confused with either one of you?
No.
Okay.
Indeed. No, I think they know who Jason Swigart is.
One political question for you.
Okay, and then I want to get to something, and then we'll get to something else.
Not going to dive into dangerous territory here. Calm down. There's been a couple individuals who are jumping into the Democratic side of things for the election.
Yeah, a little late entrance.
When does this pay off?
I'm
not very sound politically with the history of things, but do people jump in at this point?
Yeah, what took you so long?
Yeah. Is this really going to work for you?
Yeah, like 17 wasn't enough. Now you need two more. Let's make it 19 back on the debate stage.
Well, it depends on one, if you're a household name already, and two, how much is in the old war chest. If, like, people are coming to you not satisfied with what's going on amongst those that have already declared.
Yeah.
And there's a boatload of cash behind it, then it could work.
But they did a study on this, and the study found that, like, Michael Bloomberg wants to join, right? The perfect Democratic candidate right now is a billionaire guy who is going to somehow sway the Bernie, Elizabeth Warren folks to get on his train.
No, he's trying to take over the center, which is they think Joe Biden is vulnerable.
Right, okay.
Which is why these guys are jumping into the race.
And I'm with you. There's validity to that. But, like, my thought is Michael Bloomberg is actually rated. He doesn't test well. They've already done polls. They've done like two or three polls, and nobody wants him to run.
New York mayors don't tend to do good in general national elections last time I checked.
The Democrats need a celebrity to go, you know, match the celebrity star power that's on the other side. That's the trick.
Why are we going so far down this road?
I don't know who I want to yell at more. Matt Nagy for not changing his quarterback or Kamala Harris for not dropping out because nobody's voting for you, Kamala Harris.
Just get out of the race, would you? I do want to start a new thing. We might have to pick this up on the show. We all enjoy placing our bets on the Oregon Lottery scoreboard app. We enjoy
that. Absolutely.
I've already placed my bets for tonight. I'm an idiot. I'm taking the Browns. I'm also taking the under in the game.
Good luck to you. Every time I've bet the Browns, it doesn't go
well. You made fun of me for taking them last week, and it worked out well because I beat the Bills at home, which means they're going to lose tonight.
Wasn't that a push, though? They won by 3. Or did you take them straight up?
I took them straight up.
Oh, yeah. That was a push number.
Yeah, I think it was 1916 or something was the final, something weird like that. But anyways, I think we need to start, and it can either be one of us if we're that passionate, or we can all combine to put one together, like the can't-lose parlay of the day. Because Jason Swigart has an apparent can't-lose parlay that he's very excited
about.
Well,
I was seeing if I was Looney Tunes, and, you know, you kind of, sometimes yeah. you need a sounding board.
You
it's
do.
It's like, whoa, dude, are you, hey, whoa.
Like, or, I'm taking the Browns tonight, and you should talk me out of that. It's too late, I already placed the bet. But what is your can't-lose parlay of the night?
Okay.
There's only one on it that may, I know what it is. It's Baker Mayfield under 240 yards passing.
Okay. Yes.
The Clippers -1 after the first quarter with Paul George returning.
Yes. And Kristaps Porzingis over 20.5 points as he returns to MSG.
And everybody boos him and he has an FU game. You're the Knicks, shut up.
Can I tell you what? The only one that concerns me.
Well, let's see if it's the same one.
Is Baker Mayfield.
Me too.
That's the only one that concerns me. And I know that the Steelers have a good defense and that it seems like a good bet. But if they're down and he has to throw his way back into the game,
just
he might throw some picks
and
that kind of stuff. But they take away the run. He's forced to throw a couple of chunk plays here or there. That's the only one that concerns me. But all of them look good on paper.
Yeah, the only thing is they do have Kareem Hunt back, so there might be a double dose of rushing, which is where Pittsburgh is more vulnerable than in that back secondary right now. You might see Cleveland. Plus, it's supposed to be freezing, literally freezing at kickoff. So,
oh, is it really that cold?
32 degrees. Now, they're not expecting much, if any, precipitation.
Oh, come on, give me a snow
but
game.
But here's the good news.
Wind around 10 miles an hour.
Yeah, the good news, though, is when Cleveland wins, it's because they run it a lot with Nick Chubb.
Exactly.
So you're just hoping they want to run and control the clock and maybe eke out like a 12-6 game.
You know what? Now we're just going to dive into breaking down Thursday Night Football. I like it. The Pro Football Focus angle, did you see what the Browns did successfully last week that I thought was interesting?
Oh, I missed that.
So Kareem Hunt was back.
Yep.
And I know he didn't go off rushing-wise, but I think he had like 7 catches for 50 yards, something like that. They use him a lot in the passing game. And there was some analytical people that dove into the numbers of when they had Chubb and Kareem Hunt on the field at the same time and how helpful it was for each of them and having two dynamic guys that you could either hand it to or throw it to. And they were very successful using that personnel package.
Well, if you're not going to run it with Kareem, run it with the Chubb.
Exactly. You go to either one.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, there you go. I don't know how we got on that, but I do like that can't miss parlay of the day. I'm on board with that. That's not a bad one.
Well, and Dirt also made the note. I think Swag has a real degenerate vibe right now.
Oh, he does. Yeah, he was screaming to me Tuesday at the PKI about his hockey parlays not hitting.
You're betting hockey.
He's all over NHL lines. Our P1 Jesse said he was sitting in the same section as Swigard, and he said I totally saw him on the scoreboard app at the game the other night.
Wow. Hey, he's got to update the parlay, see how it's working. But you know, I make fun of you for the hockey betting, Swag. I used to believe that only true degenerates would bet NBA basketball, and now I've bet on NBA basketball a ton.
Would it make you proud to know that I laid a drunk bet the other night on the Denver Nuggets?
Like, just straight up?
So we were at the PKI, and I had had a few IPAs throughout the night, and one of my buddies, Tommy, is a total degenerate on the NBA, and he's down to like 20 cents in his account now.
Yeah, just tell you he fills
build
it back up.
You got to build it back up.
But fun now.
We were sitting having a beer. I think it was in between the first two games, and he said, come on. Denver's at home against Atlanta, and they're only a 1.5 favorite. I'm like, are you kidding me?
Trae Young went off.
I pulled out my phone, placed the bet immediately, and the Hawks beat Denver in Denver.
It did. It sucks when Trae Young goes for 43 on you. It's hard to win a game when a player does that.
Good times. Hey, should the Giants sit out Saquon Barkley the rest of the year?
You know, I understand the reasoning for it. But I just don't believe the NFL is ever going to be built that way. I don't think they're going to operate that way. They'll only sit him out if there's like 2 games left. When you go to 6 or more.
Yeah.
They're 2-8 right now. So, they got 6 games left.
And I'm saying this, I don't know how many home games they have left. But you always have to take into home games into account, because how many of those fans are there just to see him play versus actually caring or knowing their team's going to win? the NFL doesn't like to play this game like the NBA does. They just have too few games. And I don't think this will become the norm.
The question, though, I have in the NFL are, I mean, the bulk of NFL tickets in most markets are season tickets, right?
I would imagine,
more so
yeah.
than any other sport.
Seat licenses, yeah. all that stuff.
All that stuff. That's already money in the bank. So,
are you worried about the secondary market then?
They have three home games
yeah,
left,
but
Green
the
Bay,
team,
Miami,
the teams
Philly.
Don't make any money off the secondary market except True. For maybe fees because if you go through their approved ticket broker or whatever on
their actual
websites.
Website, yeah.
But the tickets are already sold. The teams have already got the gate for the most part. So I don't buy that argument. I mean, it looks bad on TV, but if your team stinks anyway towards the end of the season, nobody's showing up, especially if the weather sucks.
I think I think you should sit out. Now, how many games is it now or in a couple of weeks? I don't
know. I just wonder from his sake, does he have like bonuses in his contract that he could realistically reach?
He wants to play. He wants
he came
to
out
play.
And said that. He did. And I wouldn't make this argument, honestly, for anybody else because, and we talked, if you missed it, we had Ross Tucker on in the first hour of the show, and he wrote an article about it this week, and he talked to some people on Wall Street about assets and the way they should view things and about, I mean, the future of the Giants is built around Saquon Barkley, and if they're going to be good in the next couple of years, you need him to be healthy and you want him to be fresh. Running backs are a depreciating asset, right? Yeah. We know that. The more that they run, the more times they get hit, the more action that they see, the fewer carries they have left. I mean, look no further than Todd Gurley. Look no further than the fear overpaying Ezekiel Elliott this offseason for Dallas. He's been dominant early in his career, but there's a hesitation of should you pay him? Is he going to be good in 3 or 4 years? And now Todd Gurley maybe has arthritis. I mean, that's the thing I look at. I would never make this argument for a quarterback, for a wide receiver, offensive lineman, defensive lineman. Like those guys, sure, give them the reps and they can go play in front of their fans. But Saquon Barkley is your offense. He is a phenomenally talented player, one of the best backs, if not the best back in the league. You're 2-8, and he's already gone through injury scares this year. He had to miss time earlier this season. He came back way sooner than anybody imagined, and then he got hurt again this week against the Jets. Why are you trotting him out there? If you lose, they're going to lose in Chicago this weekend, probably. You're going to fall to 2-9. Then they play the Packers. They're probably going to lose that game and fall to 2-10. Then you play Philly on the road. They're probably going to lose that game. Now, weird things happen in the NFL, but in all likelihood, they could be sitting there at 2-11. Why are you giving Saquon Barkley 30 carries in week 14?
Yeah, but to the I'll give a listener credit on this one earlier. This is, I think, the first hour they text in. What if they suck next year? Like, where do you – are you just going to keep doing this every year?
I get that. It's
for his first 3-4 years, he only plays, like, 10 games a year or whatever it is.
I get it. It's a slippery slope. No doubt.
I just – there's something to – I think NFL guys more think of it not in the we're going to win to go to the playoffs because their season's over. They're not good. But I think it's more about development, chemistry, establishing just familiarity with what you're running. Now, I don't know if – Pat Shurmur may very well get fired this year and they have to bring in a new coach, a new system. So it's all a moot point. But I think right now they view it as we're going to have everything back next year. Daniel Jones is, I was going to call him just Danny.
Danny Dimes.
I wasn't going to say Dimes. I was just going to say Danny. And that just felt weird.
Hey, you're on a first name basis with him.
How many great quarterbacks are named Danny? Not Dan, just Danny. That felt weird.
Let's see. Danny White of the Cowboys.
I said great.
Danny O'Brien of the Jets.
Said great.
If there was a quarterback in the Brady show, it would be Danny.
Right. But my point is they think Daniel Jones comes back. He's got the experience. He played with Saquon all these amount of games. Let's keep it out there. And maybe they establish something in the passing game along with what he does rushing wise. I would more lean towards your final two games, sit him out. But I wouldn't sit him yet.
Okay.
I think you owe the fans at least a certain sure. amount of games. And I love his attitude about it. He seems like he's kind of that
too.
Way, too.
I do, too. He's a passionate guy. Just like Dame, whenever this stuff comes up, would you tank, all that kind of stuff. Like, no, he's too competitive. He's not going to do it. But we have a poll question on that, and you can go chime in at Dirt and Sprague, at 1080 The Fan.
Danny Werfel.
Danny Werfel, there you go.
Danny works in college. You get to the NFL, and nobody's going to take it seriously.
I want to get to a couple things coming up next. By the way, our NFL picks are at the top of the hour. What should the punishment be for the Houston Astros? Like, that is a storyline that's not going away. They're investigating it, and Jeff Passan had some news on it, so I want to get to that. Also, do you enjoy the egotistical nature of Zlatan Ibrahimovic. Did I say it right?
Love it.
Did I say it right?
You
did. Right?
Zlatan.
Zlatan Ibrahimovic. Do you enjoy his ego?
Dude, I think he had one of the greatest walk-offs of any athlete leaving a team ever.
I need to get to that next as well. Crunch time on the Fam.
The pressure's on.
We have an opportunity to reestablish ourselves, get a big win. Not all is lost.
Who's feeling the heat?
Now we got to go home and make sure that, you know, we take care of business there. Shame on us if we don't.
It's crunch time. A look at the hottest topic in sports. Brought to you by Crunch Fitness. As low as $9.95 per month. No hassle, no pressure, no gimmicks, and no judgments.
Hey, Crunch Time, brought to you by Crunch Fitness, where their trainers can work with anyone on how to lose weight the correct way and gain strength at the same time. I was at the Glorious House of Gains this morning.
Let's go!
Thanks, Tom. We'll get to our NFL picks coming up at the top of the hour. Also, a rant from Yogi Roth that we would like to play because he agrees with us. And what the hell, let's play that bad boy. Get to the poll questions, all that stuff. The can't-miss parlay of the day has been tweeted out, courtesy of one, Jason Swigart.
Yep, it's
so go
in.
Check it out. The bet has been placed. To get to a couple of notes, Zlatan Ibrahimovic. If you don't know,
Zlatan.
If you don't know who he is, he's a very good soccer player.
Did we do a poor job covering him in America from the media? I felt like he should have had even more viral interview moments.
Yeah.
Yeah, but how much are you paying attention to?
Well, it's not so much the MLS. He was
very good.
SportsCenter, like if you watch SportsCenter on the weekends and stuff,
yeah, they show those highlights.
Played him up quite a bit.
What I mean by that is just having him in interviews more. I mean, like hearing from, not just showing the amazing play that he gave, but having these sit-down interviews.
Well, he came over to the MLS, and he is now, it sounds like, leaving the MLS. He played for the LA Galaxy. His numbers were off the charts. He lived up to the hype. I think he, in 56 matches, thank you very much, he scored 52 goals. He was named the Galaxy's Player of the Year for 2018 and 19. He was named the MLS Best 11. What do they call it?
Yeah, Best 11.
Okay, both years as well. So he lived up to the billing. Well, he is now, it sounds like, heading back overseas to play soccer. So he's done in the MLS. And he sent out a tweet yesterday. The picture is him essentially standing over L.A. with his arms open, like celebrating a goal, and the L.A. skyscrapers in the distance and the soccer stadiums in the distance. He tweeted this, and I quote, "I came, I saw, I conquered. Thank you, L.A. Galaxy, for making me feel alive again. To the Galaxy fans, you watch Zlatan. I gave you Zlatan. You are welcome." The story continues. Now go back to watch baseball.
He's special.
I just want to know if he walks around his house talking the same way that he does to the reporters.
Yes.
I think he does.
Oh, Zlatan hungry.
This is the kind of guy who has mirrors for walls.
Well,
just so he can walk around and...
Yeah.
Well. Yeah. When he's making love, he's got a mirror on the ceiling and he's looking at himself.
Oh, yeah. He's got a lot of A-Rod in him. His cover photo should be him making out with himself in the mirror.
How would we feel if a Blazer came to town and had a couple of good years and then left and said, "You're welcome"?
Well, what if Dame's approach was that?
"You're welcome, Portland. I came, I conquered."
Look, I know what Dame has meant and his impact to the community, all that. Let's say Dame plays, let's go, 6 more years. And then he just goes, "You know, I want to retire at a decently youngerish age. I don't want to play when I'm old and can't do it anymore." And he still remained a great Blazer throughout those 6 years. And he walks away... And his thing is, "You're welcome, Portland." What's the response from the fans for one of the most beloved athletes, or maybe the most beloved athlete of all time here in Portland? Are we kind of going, "Whoa, what?
Wait,
what?" Or are we going, "He's right"?
He's right. I mean, thank you.
He's right. I think it's different if you're somewhere. I mean, the equivalent would be, I'm trying to think what the equivalent would be.
Because he doesn't talk that way, ever.
No.
He's never a guy, right?
No.
And then he just like ends it and goes, "You're welcome, Rip City." And he walks out.
Just drops the mic. "We'll see you later."
He probably would get a pretty good ovation with something.
I'm sure
like
he
that.
Would. Depending on what he accomplished, I think he would get a decent response. Because he'd get a chuckle out of it.
People wouldn't take it seriously from like an ego standpoint. They would just assume he's kind of having fun with the moment. And
well, this is Zlatan Ibrahimovic, man. It's wild. And he's going back overseas, but that tweet was fantastic.
Why is he going overseas and not continuing to play? Is he no good anymore?
No, he's still dominant. I don't know the answer to the first question.
I probably he can make more money over there. I mean, they like to come over here, dominate the headlines. My guess is also they find out how far off the radar soccer is in the United States.
Yeah, do you think they come over here thinking they can change
so
it, right?
It depends.
Especially in L.A.
It depends on what the mentality is. There are some of those European guys that like to come over here because it gets them out of the spotlight they've been in Europe, and they're like, I can just disappear into a cool city if it's New York or L.A. or Miami or whatever if they're tired of being in the spotlight, because even though they're playing soccer, unless you're David Beckham where you went way off the other end. But if you want the spotlight and you want to try and dominate, I don't think they realize how far off the radar it is over here.
Well, to tell you what it was like, the MLS championship just happened. Was it last weekend or the weekend before?
Did Seattle win?
No, Seattle beat Toronto. Seattle beat
That's our second championship, by the way.
Yes.
Fewer than 900,000 people watched it.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. It was,
Not less than 900,000?
Well, I don't know. Like, we make
That's
fun of sports
television ratings. Now, I would say there's probably a lot who stream the MLS because
there was a couple hundred thousand on Univision that you had to. Yeah. I think they were watching, you know, Spanish language broadcasts, that kind of stuff. They scheduled it on the middle of an afternoon on a Sunday.
Yeah.
Ooh.
During football season.
Yeah.
Yeah. Especially the Seahawks game was Monday. Oh, the Seahawks game was Monday, but
still, what are you doing? Like we criticize baseball, their scheduling, it's like people want them to wrap up the season before football because you're just not going to get eyeballs, that kind of stuff. Like the ML, I mean, you're just not doing yourself any favors.
I don't know, did Fox have it or did ESPN have it?
I don't know.
You don't even know? You don't even know? If you don't even know, why would we know?
If you don't know that, then I don't know.
Well,
that.
And here's my other thing. I've been to an MLS game, only one, but when I went to that, it was great. It was a great atmosphere. I've recommended it to a ton of people since we went, and I'd love to go again. I still don't watch it on a television basis. And my question is, when I was around, what would I have been? 12. Yeah, I was 12 when the women won the World Cup in 99 and Chastain took the shirt to celebrate. That was a cool-ass moment. And at that time, that was when everybody took off with the soccer is coming narrative. Mm-hmm. Well, I'm 32 years old. When is it coming? Am I going to be 55 years old and then that guy's going to... I told you it was coming. Like, I just want to know what the timeline is, if MLS people think it's going to speed up and they're going to start getting in that talent, that top end talent, to make the MLS maybe even better.
They've taken steps, but I think this year the ratings were a bit of a step back. There's been some higher rated games, and this was one of the more lower rated games.
Yeah, it was on ABC.
It was on ABC. So
it was on ABC.
At
noon on a Sunday. So
that's not good news. If ABC's not generating,
they'd be better off if they did it. Don't have a 9 a.m. kick on college football Saturday, and you had a huge 12:30 game and put it at 9:30 or 10 a.m. right before you get, I don't know, Ohio State and Penn State or some crap like that. They'd be much better off doing it that way.
Or hell, just play it on like a Tuesday night and market the crap out of it.
Well, those schools, by the way, would be happy to do that. I saw a report that they were complaining about having to play the 9 a.m. kick from those schools.
Yeah.
Imagine when the Pac-12 has to do it.
It exists everywhere. So there he goes. Zlatan Ibrahimovic has announced that he's leaving the Galaxy on Twitter. He said, "I came, I saw, I conquered. To the Galaxy fans, you wanted Zlatan. I gave you Zlatan. You are welcome. Now go back to watch baseball." So there you go. He is heading back overseas after 2 years in the MLS. Crunch Time brought to you by Crunch Fitness, where their trainers can work with anyone on how to lose weight the correct way and gain strength at the same time. Locally owned and operated with 6 locations to serve you. I didn't get to the Astros note there. I want to get to that coming up in the final hour of the show. Jeff Passan has a report out about the way Major League Baseball could try and punish them. So we'll get to that coming up. We got some poll questions we need to answer. Yogi Roth went on a rant that I want to play for you. But we start the final hour on a Thursday with our NFL picks. Don't look now, but your boy's back in business. Loaded final hour. Don't go anywhere. Dirt and Sprague on 1080 The Fan.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s. And each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto-pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto-pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.